I wonder if it's live on the Facebook page and if people are going to see this when they go to click on it, which they definitely are going to. Yeah, see, I'm live right now.
Excellent.
I'm going to share it. All right, guys. We're going to talk about some news and notes on the show, right, David?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Not much else going on with the NBA season, so good opportunity for us to kind of recap exactly what's been happening as of late.
Unfortunately, we don't get to talk about the new jerseys because we still have no idea what those are going to look like. I'm really, that's kind of what I've been like monitoring my Twitter feed for, is just when are these things going to drop?
I'm actually starting to dread them a little bit, to be honest with you.
Dread what?
I'm not looking forward to, I don't think that they're going to be good. I mean, I've seen a few that have been pretty outlandishly bad. Okay, I guess the most recent one was really the Timberwolves one. How did that strike your fancy? I mean, we haven't
They're
seen the
awful.
neon green one.
So the good news is, right? The good news is that the awful ones are out of the way and they're not Miami's, right? Like there's always one awful jersey whenever, like, remember when Nike took over for the NFL and they released the Seahawks jerseys with like the neon greens, and those actually look cool, but like
Right.
that was the one outlandish, crazy uniform set that they put out, and everything else is basically the same. I feel like everything's basically been the same except for like Indiana. But
Yes.
Minnesota got the crazy one. They got the crazy, like, quote unquote modernized version of it.
Right.
And that means, even though we haven't seen Miami's, that the Heat are in the clear. Like, they're not gonna
Maybe.
do that to me,
Maybe.
right?
Maybe. I don't know. To be honest with you, I'm thinking they could flip the switch a little bit. The one I didn't like particularly was Denver. Denver looked like they just borrowed Indiana's colors for some reason. Like they took out the powder blue, they took out the whole
Yeah.
cityscape design that had been so popular, and all of a sudden they just.
Denver did what Utah did a couple years ago, where they just got rid of their unique colors and they just went with the like a slate blue and gold slash yellow, and it just looks so generic now. I think Denver should have just always had the like the Rocky Mountain jerseys.
Right.
That's the right mountain chain, right?
Yes, it is. Considering their mascot is Rocky the Lion, I think you're probably right on the money there.
The only reason I know anything about geography is because of sports. Should we start? We should officially start the show. Let's do it.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil, and we are doing our first real live show with Locked On Heat. We're going to talk about some news and notes, the latest going on in everything Miami Heat. And we should probably start with the latest news in that we've got some scheduling hints and inklings about what the Miami Heat season is going to look like. We know that first they're going to be starting the preseason on October 1st against the Atlanta Hawks. That'll be the first game of the season. The regular season opener is in Orlando, so Miami will open up the season on the road on October 18th. The Heat will get to play the Nets in Mexico City. They'll host the Cavs at some point this season. But let's start with the preseason opener against the Hawks. How excited are you just to at least know, David, what the season is going to look like and how it's going to start?
I mean, it's great. It's the first of six preseason games. We play every opponent in the Southeast Division, so gives us a good chance to kind of see what we're going to go up against. Look, the Hawks are not the ideal opponent in the sense that, well, I mean, they're rebuilding, obviously. They don't have a lot on their roster, and so they're not going to offer much of a competition. Anyway, it's still preseason, but it's a good opportunity. And look, it's the start of the season. It doesn't really matter. I mean, it's just a great chance to see Heat basketball yet again, see how the new pieces fit in. Hopefully everybody will be healthy and playing at full strength, and that's all we could really hope for out of this preseason. Now, I mean, overall, the preseason doesn't start early. I think it actually starts a little bit later, but the regular season itself starts earlier than it does. I think the intention of the league, as we've heard reported, is that they're trying to avoid having people sit out major games. And of course, also preserve players' health throughout the course of the season. So they're stretched out the regular season, and we're starting to see the first indications of that. So none of this is official, but it's on pretty good authority that this is the way that the preseason and regular season will shape up.
And the NBA and Adam Silver, they're expected to announce some changes to the regular season that's going to limit things like 4 and 5 nights, back-to-backs,
right.
Traveling over 2,000 miles for single games, which is just, it takes up way too much time on the schedule. And so between that news and then getting this information about just having some hints at what kind of games we might see and when, I'm getting really excited for the Heat season. You know, now we're finally, look, for you and me, for sure, it would be nice not to have to deal with 4 and 5 nights, 4 games and 5 nights, right? It'd be nice not to have to deal with as many back-to-backs. They will do more games over the weekend, so we won't be able to do our after shows as much, but it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited for the game in Mexico City, and I'm not sure why. It's a regular season game. This one is official. The Heat have announced this. The Heat will play the Brooklyn Nets in Mexico City on December 9th. So yeah. This counts as a Brooklyn home game. So Miami will still stay whole. They'll keep their 41 home games, right? This won't take away from anything Miami is expected to get from their home games. But the good news is that, I don't know, the Heat get to expand their reach south of the border.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It's not like in the past, I know that they've kind of had a player that might be from a particular area or geographical location. And so there's more of an appeal in that sense. You know, when Miami went to Brazil to face the Cleveland Cavaliers a couple of years ago, one, it was the Cavs. LeBron had just returned back, but they also had Anderson Varejão as well. So there were a lot of connections there. And the Heat were, you know, coming off of the Big Three era, and so they were certainly at the top as far as popularity is concerned. It's interesting that Miami would be one of the three teams, because it's actually Brooklyn hosting Oklahoma City on one occasion, and then Miami on another. So one of three teams to be playing there over a few games, a few day stretch there. So I'm not quite sure exactly what the strategy is, although I guess Miami is closest in proximity. You'd think the Spurs, who have played in Mexico City before. But still, I mean, those, from everything we've heard, those are good bonding opportunities for the team. You get to go across the border there. You go to a different country and you kind of, you know, enjoy that experience. You get a lot of camera attention and stuff like that. And you go to Mexico City. It's a great metropolitan area. So it should be an interesting opportunity for a lot of these players.
Some other information that came out, the Darren Rovell of ESPN tweeting that Miami will be the first team to not accept paper tickets, the first NBA team to not accept paper tickets at the gate. Now, fans to get into the games will have to use digital/mobile tickets from their smartphones. And I know that you're not exactly excited about this.
The thing is, I remember going to games as a kid and going and keeping those tickets. Or even as an adult, tickets are like souvenirs. And I mean, I've kept... Maybe I'm ridiculous. I probably am more on the other extreme of the spectrum there, but I've kept like every movie ticket that I've ever gone to over the last 20 years. I have kept every concert ticket, et cetera. I mean, perhaps I'm a little bit of a hoarder, but I think there's something special in having that memento, to remember the game by. You get the game program, et cetera. And it's all part of an experience, a special night. You know, to be with family or whatever. Maybe you go on a first date to a Heat game or something like that. Now it's just something disposable. It's a quick page you open up on your phone, and all of a sudden it's gone. It's like it never really happened. And to me, there's something about that I don't quite like. You know, and maybe it's just an old fashioned attitude. I certainly cop to that, but at the same time, I think there's something nice about having that physical representation of the experience of the game.
Well, this is just the further modernization of sports. Like, you have teams that are called the Dallas Cowboys or the San Francisco 49ers, and they don't even play in Dallas or San Francisco because they had to build new state-of-the-art stadiums somewhere else, several miles away. You've got the Warriors now leaving Oakland, where they've been forever, to build the state-of-the-art stadium in San Francisco, where it's going to go from die-hard Warriors fans to Silicon Valley rich tech people that can afford the tickets there. And I think this is just another version of that, where I commend the Heat for being trailblazers in this sense, but you know, as far as industry leading, but this is just, look, this is, they don't care about, like, the NBA, maybe, you know, they don't care about the value of a paper ticket, because what they're trying to do is keep, they're trying to beat the scalpers. They're trying to beat the secondary ticket market.
Yes.
We've seen the NBA already make a strong case to regulate and get involved in the secondary market. Just that's what the Andersons got tickets to the game commercial. That's the commercial for the NBA's secondary ticket site, right? Where if you don't want to go to a game, you need to sell tickets in the last minute, go to NBA's secondary ticket site, NBATickets.com, and you can sell it there instead of going to StubHub or Ticketmaster or giving them up to a friend or whatever it might be. Do it in their wheelhouse so that they can get at least a cut of it or regulate it. And that's what all of this is. It's so much harder now. It is so much more difficult to transfer the rights of a digital ticket than it is to just hand a piece of, like, a printed paper to somebody else outside the arena, right? Like, you could go outside American Airlines Arena and see 1,000 scalpers out there. You know, you pay $50, you can get in the game or whatever it's going to be, and that's going to go away, right? You can't, scalpers won't be able to do that anymore.
But even, okay, you're right about the scalping market. I totally understand that. And, you know, again, it's always going to be based on money. But, I mean, just even, like, you know, sharing a game, you know, like, let's say you got an extra ticket to your game and your buddy backed out at the last second, you know, you want to bring somebody along. Or if you get tickets from work, as I have in the past, you know, it's, those experiences are gone now. I mean, okay, I understand that they're still there and that you can actually forward an email to somebody where you accept the tickets, and then you have the same thing where you click onto the email, you log on or something along those lines. And they've got this whole FAQ section already up on the Heat website. It's just, I don't know, man. It's just like, it used to be so much simpler. You get a ticket. And you get to give your ticket away. You know?
I just went to a concert, and I know I had the thing on my phone, but I printed them off just because I like to be safe. What if my phone dies on the way to the concert?
Absolutely.
And all of a sudden, it's like, no, trust me, I bought tickets. And I'm like, well, your phone's dead, so we can't help you.
Oh, what about like elderly folk who may not even have a smartphone? And this just reminds me of, like, when they were converting to all digital cable a few years ago, and they kept having those commercials for the last few people who had, like, antenna-based TV and stuff like that. But there wasn't there, like, that super fan who was, like, 90-plus years old? She used to sit right there on the sidelines right next to the hoop.
Yep.
Like, she doesn't have no smartphone. She can't get into the game. What are you going to do? You're going to boot her out after 30 years of being a Heat fan? It's like, sorry, granny. Go buy yourself the latest Galaxy phone. I mean, that's not cool.
I don't know how look, this is what this is change. Like, just like you said, when everybody had to switch their televisions over, this is what's going to have to happen eventually. It's not because, the reason I have a problem with it is not because it's not, you know, it's environment. It's not because, look, if you get rid of all the paper tickets and some, that, yeah, it's probably good for the environment. You're cutting down on waste. That's not why they're doing this. You know, it's not because the technology is better than just a paper ticket. The reason they're doing it is because they want to further regulate. And the NBA is extremely successful, and this will be successful for them. It will be. You know, it might take a couple of years to work out the kinks, but it's going to be a successful initiative. But that's what it's for. It's just so that they can get in on the secondary market, so they can control it a little bit more. Because even if they could just take a percentage off the top, which they can't do when people are just scalping paper tickets or giving them away to friends at the office, they just want to get in on it. So... It is what it is, which I suppose isn't the best take for a podcast, but that's where we are. you're listening to Locked On Heat. Locked On Heat still has some inventory for sponsorships left for the upcoming Heat season. This is a great, affordable way to connect with Heat fans. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to connect with sponsors than any other media formats. Email us directly at lockedonheat@gmail.com. Our rates are reasonable, and they are based on listens, so you get the bang for your buck that you want. You could have your company right here on Locked On Heat. Okay.
Yeah.
So
great opportunity for local companies to reach a very niche market there. We've got a lot of listeners in South Florida. So if you're looking to reach a wider audience, Locked On Heat advertising is the way to go.
So let's talk a little bit about these ESPN projections that came out a few days ago. ESPN has Miami at 7th in the East, which would be in the playoffs, at 42 and a half wins. And they've also got Whiteside as a first-time All-Star. But let's start with the record. Let's start with the standings. Miami won 41 games after a dreadful first half of the season. They come back. They go through the second half of the season, 30-11. It's a 60-win pace extrapolated for a full 82-game season. They re-sign all their dudes. They add Bam Adebayo. They add Kelly Olynyk. They don't really lose much other than Willie Reed and Luke Babbitt. We'll talk about that later. But all of that, 1.5 extra wins? I get that they're now 7th in the East instead of 9th, but that's really just because the East lost so many good players. It just feel the ESPN projections, I feel like, didn't really give Miami as much of a reward or a nudge that most fans of the team, and you and I on this show, have really given them as far as what we think they'll do. You and I have been saying pushing for 50 wins. Maybe they won't get there, but we think they'll get darn near close. Your reaction, 42 and a half wins. Did they get shorted?
Absolutely. I mean, they've got the Boston Celtics winning below 50, so they don't expect much from the East overall. I mean, they're using their real plus minus model in order to formulate exactly how many wins each team's going to get. They've got Cleveland just below Boston at 49.2. They expect teams like the Hornets to kind of supplant Miami and go past them. And they've also got Milwaukee and Washington above the Heat, too. So I think they round out the top four there. So it's Washington, Milwaukee, and then you've got Charlotte at 5th, Toronto at 6th, and then Miami at 7th. 42 wins. I mean, considering what you're bringing back, let's say you even have – you're going to have, at the very least, the same level of chemistry that you did last year. I mean, that's not going away. I can't see any possible scenario. I guess if I'm starting to think about worst case scenarios, what Deion starts getting greedy with the ball, he stops sharing. Spoelstra kind of loses control of the locker room, and Deion decides, "Look, I got paid. I'm going to be the star of this team," and he takes over. Nobody can keep him in line, and things deteriorate completely. That doesn't seem like it's a possible scenario whatsoever. I mean, with Udonis and James Johnson and other guys like that on the roster, I don't think there's any chance of that kind of locker room slippage from Spoelstra's hands there. So I just don't see how that's going to work out.
One of the things in the projections, what they said was that Miami shot three-pointers at an extremely efficient rate in the second half of the season and defended threes at a league-leading rate in the second half of the season. They almost – my problem with that is, yes, that's true. But it kind of counted that as an exception, as almost just like this weird fluky thing that happened in the second half of the season. But if you look closely at the way the Heat played in the second half, especially versus how they played in the first half, they changed their offense completely to really emphasize three-pointers. In the first half of the season, Miami didn't know what their offense was. They just kind of just threw the ball into Whiteside in the post and just said, go to work, post up, throw up a bad hook shot, whatever you got to do. We don't know where else our offense is going to come from. And, you know, they experimented with Justice Winslow as a lead ball handler a little bit in the first half. They had injuries to Josh Richardson. Deion Waiters wasn't quite right. James Johnson hadn't carved out his role. There was just a lot of things that were unknown and in their way. And as the season progressed, they figured it out. And Spoelstra kind of stumbled on this drive and kick offense that revolved around Dragic and Waiters. He took the ball out of Whiteside's hands a little bit. Now you had, you know, Dragic and Waiters leading among the league leaders in drives per game, getting to the rim and kicking out to open shooters like Rodney Magruder, who developed, you know, halfway through the season. Guys like Luke Babbitt, who solidified their starting power forward position. That really helped them. And I don't think it's just this fluky exception. It was a strategic development. And on defense, it was the same thing, but you know, you had Whiteside protecting the rim, and you had all these four perimeter guys just chasing guys off the three-point line. That wasn't the defense at the beginning of the season. That happened through and developed as the course of the season went on. And I don't. Maybe they won't be as efficient, but I have no reason to think that they wouldn't. I think that if you look at the if you kind of go by ESPN's projection that it's just not going to happen again because it was a fluke, that seems about as likely. That seems more unlikely than the team just continuing that trend, because the trend was started by actual strategic initiatives and talent on that roster, the way that that team kind of coalesced and started playing.
Right. My biggest thing is there is a lot of reasons. You can break it down succinctly this way, I think. There were a lot of reasons why the team started off badly. One, like you mentioned, injuries, the loss of Dwayne Wade, not being able to account for Chris Bosh's absence, et cetera. So a lot of different things, trying to incorporate all these new players. A lot of reasons why things went bad in the first half, but all of them started working towards this goal. They stayed together, and they worked really well in the second half. And those factors are still in place and even better this season. So I don't. Right. That's why we think that they're likely to increase last season's win total by a significant margin, not just 1.5 games. I mean, barring any injury, which of course changes things dramatically.
Right, and you can't predict that.
Right. It's not like Goran and Dion aren't going to drive to the hoop and be effective at finishing at the rim, at least Goran in particular. I mean, Hassan is Hassan. He's only going to continue to get better. James Johnson understands his role. We've got a much more adept defender in Kelly Olynyk and three-point shooter than what we had in Luke Babbitt. So this roster is better than it was last year, and not to mention the fact that we've got another year of Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow, both of whom are looking to prove themselves. So I think this team is going to be significantly better than last year and continue to develop on what we saw in the second half of the season. At least that's the expectation, and I don't see any reason. There's no proof that it won't work out that way.
And there's exactly that's a really good way to put it. And so the East also got a lot worse. Like how many games is Miami going to be significant underdogs in? You know, outside of a weird scheduling thing where they're on the road in a back to back or something. Cleveland, Boston, Washington, Toronto, like probably those four teams there'll be underdogs in every game. But other than that, it's a toss up, and they play most of their games against the East. Okay, we got to talk about Michael Beasley, but first we are asking our listeners to help us out with the show. A new season means we need a new intro song. We wanted to give the musicians or wannabe musicians out there who listen to us a chance to have their work featured on Locked On Heat. So you can email your submissions to lockedonheat@gmail.com. We'll be taking submissions for the month of August, and after the month, we'll choose one to be our new jingle for the season. We'll give the artist a shout-out on each episode. There's no rules. You could be as creative as you want. Use vocals, use instruments. It could be a live instrument. It could be something off of GarageBand or whatever the thing is called. You could send your submissions to lockedonheat@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing your work. We may even preview some of the best ones on the show during the month and just get your reaction to them.
What kind of music would you want? If you had your druthers, what would you want?
Yeah. So right now
something
we have like
acoustic,
that kind of
maybe.
Right now we have a sort of jazzy, like radio-y intro. You know what I mean?
Very good stuff.
Thank you. Made it myself. It would be kind of cool to get maybe just like a rap. If one of our listeners out there is an aspiring rapper or something, like it would be cool to have one of their songs on here or like real instruments. Like if somebody has a band and has drums and electric guitar or something like that, would be cool too.
Yeah, nothing rhymes with Locked On Heat though.
Nothing rhymes with Locked On Heat. Oh, are you thinking about a rap? Are you gonna rap for us?
I'm thinking ahead. I don't know. I'm not creative enough.
Locked
as a
On Heat's
a
podcast you can't beat. See, I got him for days.
Clearly, neither of us are talented enough as rappers to come up with something. So,
all right, Michael Beasley. I was thinking about a segue, but I couldn't figure it out. Michael Beasley signs with the Knicks.
Speaking of beats that don't work, I don't know. Sorry.
Michael Beasley gives up the potential to be the Michael Jordan of China to sign with the New York Knicks. Good move or bad move for Beasley? Everybody's talking about, is this a good move or a bad move for the Knicks? Who cares? Every move that the Knicks does is a bad move. It just, everything ends up, you know, backfiring for them, it seems like. But is this a good or a bad move for Michael Beasley?
I think it's a great move for both, to be honest with you. I think I think New York is such an interesting market. He could develop the cult hero status that he has in Miami. And I think to some extreme, you know, actually, he's developed kind of a cult following everywhere he goes. Like, even though things have never quite worked out for him, and especially like Minnesota or Phoenix, where he had like notable issues with the law and stuff like that, in New York, he could become a true cult hero. There's just something about that kind of oblivious nature of his that kind of still, even to this day, that childlike naivete that I think is going to be so appealing to New York fans. They're going to love this kid. They're going to be rooting for him so hard and calling for his entry into games. It's not like they're going to achieve. Look, to any Knicks fans that might be listening, the playoffs aren't realistic. I think everybody knows that. You're probably going to trade Carmelo at some point in the next month or two. So you don't have much to look forward to. Why not bring Cool Bees in there, watch him go for 30 on, like, you know, 6 of 25 shooting or something like that. We need to see him unleashed out there.
I'm
trying to see how he's going to work alongside Hornacek too.
Yes. This is my argument going into last season for Miami. They're not going to be as good without Dwayne Wade or Chris Bosh, blah, 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 but at least they'll be fun, right? Like, if you're not going to be good, right, at least you'll be fun. And Miami ended up getting good, and they weren't a whole lot of fun at the beginning of the season, so my argument really didn't work. But in this case for New York, they're not going to be good, like you said, but at least be fun. If you're going to trade Carmelo Anthony away, then let's build around a trio of Willie Hernan Gomez, Kristaps Porzingis, and Michael Beasley, because why not? Let's just do this for a year. I think Beasley should have stayed in China, though. I think that he could have. He was there for one season. He put up huge scoring numbers.
Sorry. As I'm saying this, I got a notification on my phone here. Sources on ESPN from Woj. Knicks, Rockets reestablish in trade talks for Carmelo Anthony's, but hurdles remain to a deal. So it's like Carmelo leaving New York is practically a done deal at this point.
And Beasley will take his spot
and become the hero that we all knew he could be.
I love but the China, idea of Beasley that, having this whole other life in China, becoming just like this brand marketing giant, you know? Just like the highest scoring player ever.
Like the food that he talked about, like he ate horse and like snake juice or something like that. I wanted
more of horse eating Beasley. I don't need pizza eating Beasley. That's not fun. It's fine.
Right.
I'm overreacting.
In New York, where you can get anything you want, like at 4 a.m, you can just find it and somebody will deliver it to your apartment.
How many Instagram posts are we going to get from Beasley of like eating a street gyro at like 3:30 in the morning? Actually, now I'm excited. Okay. Luke Babbitt signs with the Hawks. Luke Babbitt, who started 56, 57 games for the Heat last season at power forward, solidified that spot. Ended up winning the power forward belt as far as a starter, even though you can argue James Johnson, if you want to qualify him as only a power forward, is the reigning belt winner. But Babbitt on the Hawks. What do you think?
I mean, sure. I'm looking forward to it, to be honest with you. They don't have much. They had no place for him. I think they would have loved to have brought him back. I think they would have done so if they hadn't signed Olynyk. Chances are they probably would have pursued a guy like Babbitt just because he was so cost effective, and then he did what he did well. He shot at a high percentage. He progressively got better as a defender. I mean, you know, we all cringed every time he put the ball down on the floor. He's not capable of doing that, quite honestly, but, you know, he fit his role as well as could be expected. I don't think he was a glaring problem. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You see a 7-foot-tall white kid with floppy brown hair like his, and you're going to expect the worst from him. I think that's just a matter of perception. We weren't quite sure what to expect out of him when he first signed with Miami, but I think obviously he's somewhat of an endearing personality, very quiet, and a hell of a shooter. So I think Atlanta fans will love him, to be honest with you.
You know, he's going to fit a role there. He'll hit some open threes. He's not going to do a whole lot for him defensively, especially if you consider if they play him at power forward, who he's replacing there, Paul Millsap, who was one of the best.
Yeah, he's perfect, right? Will he be an all-star next year?
Who, Paul Millsap?
No, Luke Babbitt.
Oh, he'll be an all-star next year for sure.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I'm sad to see Babbitt the Rabbit go. You know, he hopped through Miami for one season, and now he's now he's caught. But he'll be fine. Like, he's just gonna be a bench guy. Look, you need shooters in today's NBA. Miami could have brought Babbitt back. I thought they would. I thought they'd bring him back at the minimum. They didn't. You know, they decided.
Yeah, Matt Williams. I don't think you really need him.
Exactly. They decided to go younger. They get a guy like Matt Williams. They sign Kelly Olynyk. So when you sign him and you draft Bam, how many minutes at power forward are you going to really have? Do you want to play Luke Babbitt at all at small forward? Probably not. He's a power forward at this point. He can't guard opposing threes. He's just not quick enough. So it just limited the kind of resources you have. So rather than let Babbitt just kind of wither away there on the bench and you don't have minutes for him, develop somebody like Matt Williams, Derek Walton Jr., guys like that, young guys that you could put up the end of the bench who will actually benefit from being there as opposed to Babbitt, who would be better off playing somewhere else because he is what he is. And he's Babbitt the Rabbit. So, did we miss anything? I don't think so. I think we got all the...
Well, I think the discussion about Hassan Whiteside, I think ESPN is doing their summer forecast.
Oh, we skipped right over that. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, not a big deal. It's something that we've talked about in the past, that Hassan Whiteside, according to ESPN, it seems like one of the top candidates to potentially fill an all-star void next year with so many good players, Paul George, et cetera, Jimmy Butler, going to the Western Conference. There's an opportunity for some players who have never made the all-star team to kind of fit that piece there. And we've always thought that Whiteside was the most likely candidate, assuming that maybe Goran Dragic doesn't take a leap or Deion Waiters doesn't take a huge leap. Whiteside seems like the most likely candidate, and the folks at ESPN agree. So I like their argument that he
had all-star level numbers, but the Heat weren't an all-star level team, right? Miami went into the all-star break with 16 wins at the time. That was their bad half, right? So if Miami gets out of the gates stronger than last year, if they're 500 or better by the all-star break when the voting is happening, even if Whiteside puts up the same stats as last year, he should get in. It's so hard for guys on teams as bad as Miami was in the first half to make the all-star game. So Miami will be better, as we all predict, and Whiteside should get a real look. And once you actually start looking at guys like Whiteside, and if he puts up stats similar to last year, I think he'll improve on those stats, then he'll have a real chance. I think he's extremely likely to make the Eastern All-Star team.
Yeah, I agree. Especially if Carmelo gets traded. I mean, he can't get the legacy vote. Dwayne Wade's not really a candidate at this point, and he plays a backcourt position, so it doesn't really conflict with anything that Whiteside might be able to accomplish. Millsap is gone. I mean, three frontcourt players in George, Butler, and Millsap are gone. Carmelo is another one. So you're looking at four All-Stars, and of course, Gordon Hayward coming to Boston changes that, but still, you're looking at three All-Stars, guys that were locked for the team every year. Now, all of a sudden, they're in the Western Conference, not necessarily an impediment for Whiteside to make the name.
Yep, he's got a good chance. All right, do you think anybody else, Waiters, Dragic, do you think you'd give them decent chances? Just quickly before we get
started. Deion, obviously. I think if he continues to fill out as we do, as we expect, as the team's leading scorer, I think there's enough of a kind of curiosity vote there, too, from the fans. I think they'd love to see him there.
Waiters could get that grassroots movement going, right?
Yes.
From just like NBA fans in general, not just Heat fans. Waiters is a good pick to maybe get the fan vote in there. I think if he's at 20 points a game, he'll get a real look. If Dragic is at 19 or 20 points a game and 7 assists, he'll get a real good chance to make the All-Star team.
I was thinking, we could say this for another podcast, but what's the best promotional item that the Heat should put together to cement Waiters' All-Star campaign?
I mean, I like the Honey Bunches of Goats picture they tweeted out this afternoon. I thought that was good.
Even though that was awesome. I
did take umbrage with the fact that it wasn't a picture of Mario Chalmers.
Ooh, good point.
That would have been a more appropriate and accurate representation of Honey Bunches and Goats.
He's like a different flavor, like maple clusters or something like that, whatever they have there.
Waiters is the maple clusters of cereal, absolutely. No, wouldn't that be Kelly Olynyk because he's Canadian?
Ooh. Oh, wait, are we putting Olynyk in GOAT status already?
When we used to be the Heat Check, we had the cereal or not cereal segment.
Oh, my God.
Let's bring that back for another podcast. We'll compare Heat players to cereals. It is August. We have time to kill. All right. Well, for now, we'll save the cereal talk for another show. That's all we have for today, whether you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. Of course, if you're listening or watching live on Facebook, we appreciate it. We'll try to do more of these, especially as the season is underway. You can send your mailbag questions for next week to lockedonheat@gmail.com or get information about advertising on the show by sending an email to that same address, lockedonheat@gmail.com. Support the show. Make sure you download every episode. Subscribe on iTunes. Rate us, review us. Say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.